Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. The Racine Art Museum wraps up 2017, marking a series of anniversaries. 75 years ago, a Racine woman bequeathed her house to the city to create an art museum in her husband's honor. That original building is still there as the museum's Wustum Annex.
The museum's main space celebrates 15 years this coming spring. And ahead of that, we travel there to visit with Executive Director Bruce Pepich and Exhibitions Curator Lena Vigna. We had a wide-ranging conversation about art, craft, and the importance of museums.
We do think that there is, and as Bruce and I have talked about, this notion that generations kind of help spur this along, that younger people right now, younger artists making work, they don't care as much about those boundaries. So as their work progresses and develops, and then you fold that into what you're doing, you see that those hierarchies aren't significant in the same way. Like we see nothing wrong with putting jewelry next to a print, next to a painting, next to ceramics, if need be, because there's something interesting in that dialogue, and there's something interesting in that exchange, and there doesn't need to be somebody that says this is better than that. It's all just a contemporary form of expression. And then we've noticed, too, even though we have work in the collection that's now historical, like work that was made in the 40s, it wasn't historical when it was given to Wustum. So it was a part of this contemporary dialogue. It's just as time passes and we become more of an aging institution, we get to see how this contemporary dialogue plays out, you know, historically, too.
Do you find that people coming in to look at the exhibitions don't have those splits? This is just art?
Well, you know, we don't say we have an audience. We say we have audiences, and there's lots of them. And so I think we serve a group of people who come from throughout the Midwest and across the country who are here because of our specialization in contemporary craft, because we're one of the few places that is really treating the material and the artists seriously, like they're painters and sculptors. So I guess if I'm saying that, I'm still seeing a hierarchical difference between the two. Then we have a great deal of the population that comes in, I think, is learning as they come in and using the museum as an opportunity to learn. And I think one of the things is that we'll start when we collect and add works to the collection, and we will start when we pick a topic for a show with sort of an esoteric idea, something we want to talk about, some things aesthetically that we want to address, some topics, and then we stop and we say, all right, then how do we look at these esoteric topics through the lens of public education, because that really is what we're about. And frankly, no matter what I love about art is, no matter how much you know about it, you can always, there's always more to learn, and you'll never find that you've tapped out on that. So even people who know, who come in the door and know about Monet and know about Henry Moore, don't know about a lot of the craft artists we represent. So there's a great degree of public education that takes place here. And so by explaining craft people by having a David Hockney print on the wall near a figurative ceramic sculpture that has similar visual characteristics, we're showing people commonality there. And again, we say the artists are playing the same song, they're just playing different instruments. And I think we're seeing in younger artists, this, as Lena's mentioned, among younger artists, a less of an interest in being typecast as a painter, a sculptor, a potter, a weaver. They're an artist, and they want to use whatever materials are at hand to create that vision that they have in their head. I think when you're looking at the general public, though, there is a very, I would say, hand-friendly aspect of craft that doesn't exist in painting and sculpture. You don't have to be a technically proficient painter to be a good artist. You don't have to be a technically proficient sculptor to make an installation. In fact, lots of the top sculptors today are having their works fabricated by fabrication workshops. It's the idea that's being executed and focused on. But to be a good craft artist, you must be technically proficient. You must know how to make the best pot possible, how to be a great weaver, how to be a good jewelry maker from the standpoint of all the technical things. And I think that element of the hand being such an important part of the aesthetic in craft is something that the general public really can relate to very easily, because everyone has people in their families who's painted china, knits, crochets, has made quilts. No one ever comes into a contemporary...
Built a bookshelf. Yeah,
you know. And I think what that means is that people who don't have large training in art can come into a contemporary craft exhibition, and they won't say my four-year-old could do that, as they would with a Jackson Pollock drawing show, because they're seeing things and saying to themselves, okay, I understand how that works. I understand how that's assembled. Now let me think about what its meaning is. And you provide an opening, a door for that.
Yeah, and I would say that we're still the framework of a museum. We very much have the museum feel in the building and in the way that we approach things, but the objects and images that are forming that dialogue and having that conversation, because of the way we frame it, there is an accessibility that's a little bit different. And to Bruce's point, we'll have people marvel at how much labor it takes, as opposed to that conversation of, oh, my four-year-old could have done that. Like, there's that flip.
Yeah.
And I do think, though, that draws people in. So sometimes if the process draws them in, but then there are other layers that, if they so choose, they can sort through. Like, these artists are often bringing a very specific idea or concept that they want to explore to the work. So,
do you think it also that accessibility allows people to say, then approach a painting and say, huh, I wonder what the techniques to make that were?
Hopefully, yeah. It could work in that way. Because I do think, too, that when you study art from an art historical context, like Bruce and I have, we've also tried to make work. So we understand, too, that connection between what's in your head and how it actually manages to get out through your body into something else. So there is that. You don't have to have done that to feel something with the work or to try to make a connection to it. But for anybody who's tried to make anything, which could be anything, like, there is a layer and a level at which you could step into that conversation.
And, you know, also I talk a lot about how I see commonalities between the world of all these media together. For example, the printmaking community is similar to like the ceramics community in that there are printmakers who only make prints, who don't paint, and they have followings. And there's a whole group of print collectors who collect prints and don't collect painting. And it's different than the people who collect paintings primarily and collect prints by painters who enter into the print world. But that's an example of a two-dimensional medium where some people just make prints and some artists are painters and come in and out of the print field. And that happens in ceramics where people make functional things, but also some people make sculptures and go in and out and use different media. There's, I think, a lot more of overlap in practice happening and will continue to happen as we walk through this. So I think we're just trying to stay attuned to what the artists, how they're thinking and where they're heading, so that we can serve as a middleman, so to speak, between the artist and the viewer, and help facilitate a conversation that wouldn't be able to happen if the material just stayed in the studios and never was brought out publicly, or stayed in our storage area and was never brought out publicly. And I like being the place that facilitates that conversation, because the public brings so much to the objects that they're not aware of when they come and look at them. They bring all of their experiences, because they're seeing these works not as we're presenting them to them, they're seeing them through their eyes and their memories.
Well, and I was going to say, the other thing is that if an object or a painting or something is at a gallery, that's a whole different thing. It sounds like what the museum is doing and trying to do is, like you say, put them out there so that you can interact with them in a non, what's the word I want, where you're not like being asked to buy it. You're not being sold mm-hmm. anything. Mm-hmm. You're simply allowed to appreciate it and react to it however you react to it.
Well, and things that are in museum collections are owned by everybody when you think about it. I mean, and there's a saying in the art field that no collector really owns an object. You're just a caretaker until they hand it to the next generation.
And curate means to keep and to care for and to tend for. So that's, you know, as curators, in theory, that's what we're doing. We're just kind of holding on to it, framing it in different ways for the public that might be walking in, and then it's going to go on and continue a life beyond. And then someone else will, you know, put it into a different kind of dialogue at a different time.
Right, and then I think that's one of the wonderful things, and as the museum is around longer and you interact with the collection more and more things come in to the collection, you have an opportunity to rethink. You know, it's like, oh, wait, mm-hmm. this object is so interesting mm-hmm. in this way, and I never thought of it that way.
And Bruce and I have an interesting dialogue, too, because we represent different generations, mm-hmm. and we have, and you know, different genders. You know, we have different interests. There's a lot of places where we come together, but then I could take something that he would put in one context, and I would put it in a totally different context, and then it just extends that dialogue. You may not have seen both ways that it could be shown, or the many ways it could be shown, but it opens up that conversation. And then I think we just hope that people will engage. They might not like it even, but at least that's some level of stepping in front of something, having some kind of dialogue with it, or not, and just but moving on. But you've made a choice, and we like to be able to offer that opportunity.
And we talk about context a lot here, mm-hmm. In regards to the artwork. And you know, I say to people, the object doesn't change between visits. You do. And you're going to see something different in the same object when you revisit it from time to time based on what happens to you. And I guess the best analogy would be, think of water in a pail. You can pour that water into a clear bottle, a blue vase, a pitcher, three different kinds of glasses, and the water will appear different to you because of the context of the receptacle that's holding it. And so what we're trying to do is we'll take, say, a ceramic work, and that ceramic could be in a show about the influence of the Japanese aesthetic on contemporary American work. It could be in a show about the landscape. It could be in a show about a specific color or a specific texture. And each of those topics becomes a different lens through which we're asking the public to look at the object and see something different about it than they might have seen on their previous visit.
I want to go back to something you just said. How important is it for people to like or not like? How important is that idea even?
Well, when I was in grad school, I had a professor that said the work that I engaged with the most was the work that I liked the least, because it kept him coming back to it. And it took me a long time, because I thought, why would you go back to it if you didn't like it? But the point was that there was something that sort of engaged that person to just ponder. And I do think that there is value in that. You might like the idea of the exhibition, but you don't like any of the work in it. It just doesn't suit your thought about what that exhibition should be about. Or vice versa, you could just really, really hate a specific piece, but maybe it has a hook and it keeps you coming around. Or maybe it doesn't. I think any of it is valuable. I don't think it's important to have to like all of it, but of course we want you to like it enough to want to walk in the door. Like be open to the idea of what might be presented or what you might be able to take away from it.
Well, you know, I talk a lot about the American use of the term like. People frequently say, I like this, instead of saying, I think this is good. And there's a difference between I like and I think this is good. There's a lot of good art that I wouldn't want hanging opposite my bed and see it in the morning every time as mm-hmm. I get up, but I recognize it as good work. And it doesn't mean that I don't admire it, but it's not the kind of thing I want to live with. And those are the things I like. I always figure if you have a show of 200 things in the building and people like, quote unquote, or come away pleased with, say, 25% of those objects, knowing that we're programming for different audiences and broadly, I feel comfortable with that. But I think comfort is what I'm looking for here for the public more so than likability. I want people to come in and feel comfortable in the environment, and I want them to feel comfortable with the objects, that they feel they're not being talked down to about it. In the field, we have a little bit of that, not so much in the museum field because we're very focused on public education, but I do think in some of the more commercial aspects in art galleries and some esoteric settings, the general public, I think, it still feels like it's going over their head on purpose. And that to me is not, that doesn't assist the artist in communicating. You really want to create a level of comfort so that people relax and are contemplative about what they're looking at.
Well, and it also sounds like you want them to be comfortable with their discomfort if they feel any.
Yes.
That
yeah.
it's okay
Ideally.
To...
It's okay to
right.
be mm-hmm. bugged by something. You know, I mean, there's right. a lot of things out there in the world that are bugging a lot of us right now. And, you know, the only way we're going to grapple with these and solve the problems is to really wrap our heads around them. And you have to get some kind of level of comfort in order to do that. And I think one of the things that we try to do here is to send people out the door more creative than they were when they came in. And that's a contribution we can make to greater society as an institution. And I think you need to make them comfortable in order to make them sometimes uncomfortable. But, yeah. You know, we do a lot here with humor. We have a lot of very playful things, and we do have things that are mentally challenging. But I think if you have all those different feelings going on in the same exhibition, it's like a musical piece where the notes keep coming and going in different ways, or a jazz composition. You can pull out of it the sections that most appeal to you.
So going forward, you just wrapped up a really amazing year of exhibitions, anniversaries, Wisdom's 75th. As you said, it was the 50th
year of the Watercolor Wisconsin competition.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to open that up this weekend. And we're also in May of the new year, we'll be celebrating the 15th anniversary of RAM. So all these anniversaries, I think, make you look at what have we done? Where have we been? You know, we're so focused on the next show and the next show after that we frequently need something like that, I think, to make us stop and think and look back and say, what have we done?
And then look forward.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so coming up on 15 years of being here in this building, have you had even time to think about what do we want to be in 20 years?
Well, if I may,
yes.
I mean, I think one of the things that we're doing over the next couple of years is we're going to be doing, I would say, if not all, almost all of the exhibitions from the permanent collection. The permanent collection here has grown, I'm going to guess, somewhere between 350 and 400% since we opened up, and we're sitting on somewhere around 9,000 objects, of which a little over half are craft media and the other half are works on paper. And we're acquiring 300, 400, 500 pieces a year. And so we can do shows from the collection of new work that nobody's ever seen before. And the donors love that, the artists love it, and the public takes great pride, we have found, in what we own and what this says about their support of us and our care for the objects. And they like the fact that they know that these things that they admire, they'll be able to see them again. And so we're going
or
to be...
for the first time.
Right.
For the first time, and then know that they can see them, that they'll be able to see them again. It won't be the first and the last time. So I think you're going to be seeing us doing a lot of delving in. We've been doing focus shows on artists whose work we have in depth,
yes.
Which is a way of sort of showing off how much we own, but also it becomes a mini career survey. We're doing a sort of a salute in the new year to our major benefactor, Karen Johnson Boyd, who died, it'll be 2 years ago in January, by turning the whole museum over this summer into displays of objects she's given us. She donated over 1,700 pieces during a 40-year time period, and that's more than we can show at the museum at any one time, but we'll be able to put a couple hundred things out and give people an idea of just what a segment of that is like.
And I think that we do always grapple with how do we function in a contemporary context? Because as I mentioned, it's a building that you have to walk into. It's not a virtual experience. It can be, but we really want you to engage. I think most people admit that, yes, it's nice. You can get a sense of something from a distance, but with a lot of art, especially up close, is really sort of your best chance for engagement. But we sort of think about how does what we've been doing correlate to what the rest of society is doing. Because again, this focus here is still contemporary work. The conversations that the artists are trying to have, they're trying to have them with people of the contemporary time. So we want to look at how does that happen? How are we still providing the right context for that? And having so much work to draw from the collection really gives us a chance to keep that dialogue fresh in a certain way. I mean, again, you might have a favorite that you'll see every now and then, but with all of the new stuff too, there's just so much for people to sort of come in and connect with at various points.
Well, here's to many, many more years of successful collecting and exhibitions and all of that stuff. I always love talking to both of you, and thank you so much for having us down here today.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Bruce Pepich is Executive Director, and Lena Vigna is Exhibitions Curator at the Racine Art Museum. You can find a link to their current exhibits at wuwm.com.